sense.
At the races with Steve Bick. Enough! Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back at the races, and I'm just getting a kick out of a terrific tweet. Vince Colbert enjoyed John Enos, and Vince is a breeder, and I love it. Enjoying the visit. I really love those. Somebody that, you know, you see a name in the program, or you see a name on the breeding line, owner line, whatever it is, and just reach out. It's you have that kind of conversation. Somebody that is known in certain circles, but now you got a wider understanding of John Enos, and coming to the United States and putting his own money up to. It's not, you can't really, I guess you could call it pinhooking still. It's a little bit different than pinhooking. We've hooked Jeff Maddy to join us from Canterbury. And we talked to Jeff at the beginning of the meet and circled back here for one of the big good days. And tomorrow, you got Mystic Lake Derby Day and the Lady Canterbury and much more. Jeff, welcome back.
Well, thank you. Thanks, Steve. I appreciate it. Yeah, we got a big night of racing on Wednesday. I'm looking forward to this one.
We'll dig into it in a minute, but first, let's do some recapping. With the train well out of the station, and there's no doubt that this Monday through Thursday, late afternoon Eastern time, 4:40 Central, 5:40 Eastern, carved out by. By Canterbury has been a success. And every time I look, you guys are posting seven-figure handle days and more. And the 10% pick five is just a runaway success. And anybody that's playing it on a regular basis is understanding, just how much extra money is being returned to the players. It really was, it was aggressive, and it's great to see it, being welcomed.
I agree with you. I think it was the right move for us to kind of put that stamp of low takeout on our adjusted race meet, the Monday through Thursday race meet, and just try to attract some attention. And it has worked. You're right. And now it's really on us to continue to put out a good product. And that's, the bettors have lined up and they've supported us, and we need to continue to put out some good races. And I think we have throughout the week. It's like any track. There's ebbs and flows of entries. You'll get weeks where you have a ton and then others where you're struggling to fill some races once in a while. But I think overall, our cards are holding up pretty well, and the weather's been good, which is always helpful when you've got a dirt and a turf track, and you want to keep those 2 to 3 turf races a night out there, which generally draw the biggest fields day in and day out. So we've been lucky with weather. I think we might get a little rain tonight. We'll see. It's cloudy. No decisions have been made yet, but I think tomorrow should be clear for the turf festival, which will be that'll be a blessing for us for sure.
We'll look at the card. Before we do that, though, let's get some review. Last week, kind of alternating focus week in, week out with you and with Indiana. And last week, Indiana had their big Wednesday card for the Derby and the Oaks. And this week, it's your turn. Let's look back at the last 10 days or so for any trends and anything that, has really, kind of bubbled to the surface. I'll mention that when we were with Brian Aragone 2 weeks ago, we had noticed some of the early themes of the meet. And one of the things was that, Mac Robertson had kind of gotten off to a little bit of a slow start. Kind of changed. There's been some notable consistency. Tim Padilla, I keep seeing winning races. Nevada Litvin, seems like Joel Berndt has been winning literally since the gates opened.
You're right. Those are some names that have been very prominent. And you know, Mac Robertson, you always have to start, I guess, when you talk about Canterbury, talking about him. And he's I think, I'm just pulling up his record here, he's 8-for-53. So he's 15%, which a lot of trainers would kill for. And then but when Mac is 15% at Canterbury, we say he's off to a slow start. So, you know, historically, he does heat up later, though. He comes to play. Now, the meet's different, obviously, because we started a month later, but he generally heats up in August and then pulls away to win the title. But one that is surprising for me, and I guess, again, we'll say that he's off to a slow start, is Robertino Diodoro, who's won 6 out of 24. So still a very good percentage. But he doesn't seem to have his A team here right now, and I think some of his. So I would expect that we'll start to see him win some more races. But that's opened things up for other guys like Joel Berndt, who has a lot of horses for Bob Lothenbach, for Lothenbach Stables, and Joel's won 10. He's our leading trainer right now. Tony Rengsdorf, another one who always kind of flies under the radar, but. He's had some big prices. I was just looking at his average win payoff is $22.50. So that's crazy. And Diodoro's is $4.80. So with the horses that Diodoro's winning with, they're all obvious on paper, whereas Rengsdorf has popped with some big prices. So I think those are things to look at. Jockeys as well. Denny Velasquez has been really good on the turf course. And that's, you know, and I don't know if that's always been his strength, but it certainly is this year. And he's riding a lot of horses for Joel, so that helps too. But he's 30% right now on the turf course, whereas one of our top riders, Arietta, is struggling to win on the turf course. So I think those are things you want to keep in mind when you're handicapping Canterbury.
Got to mention again on the trainer side of things. Always notable for those that don't send out phalanxes of horses. And Sean Davis is working like an assassin right now with what five for 13 here through the first 3 weeks.
You're right, and we talked a little bit about him when we visited a couple of weeks ago, and I said it then. I'll say it again. I think he only has fast horses. I mean, you know, some trainers will have a stable full of horses, and some of them are slow because they have to train them, but Mr. Davis just seems to have really fast racehorses, and he'll be represented tomorrow as well. But, you know, he's got Chief Cicatrice trying the turf tomorrow, and it's a horse that's done nothing but good things for him. So I agree. He's one that you have to keep an eye on, and even if they're especially coming off the layoff. I know he popped with a horse a few weeks back that it was coming off a long layoff, and the horse was an absolute rocket and won at a nice price. So he's a guy that I would never overlook, and a really cool story with him, too. He is a true horseman, and it's good to see people like that in the game that are horsemen. They're not just program trainers. They're doing a lot of the work themselves, hands-on work, and he exemplifies that.
You know, the quarter horse side of things, is there anything that because I for me it's a bit of a mystery. Any things happening there that you think people should know about? I mean, for those that are that are interested in folding that into their play.
We're going to have to convert you to a quarter horse player. I'm telling you, it is. If you like to watch replays and do that kind of homework. They line up, they run straight, and all you have to do is find some bad trips, and you can find some big prices. We had an all quarter horse night last week Tuesday, and it was
right.
We handled okay. It was 10 races. We did almost 800,000, I think, which is really good for quarter horses. If we would have done that on a Saturday, we probably would have handled 200,000 if we were lucky. So, year in and year out, Jason Olmstead is one of our top trainers, and he'll continue to do well. And he's got a rider, Berkeley Packer, here. He usually brings one rider with him, and Packer is one of the better jocks in the room. But I think the problem that we're having with quarter horses, and I love them, but is that Prairie Meadows traditionally has run their quarter horse meet after our mixed meet ended, and now they're running right on top of us. So we've got two tracks that are 3 hours apart. Last year Olmstead, who was our top trainer, had more starts probably by double than any other trainer in Iowa. Well, now we're running at the same time, and it's causing trouble for both of us, I think. There's just not enough horses to go around, and we only overlap on one day, but same thing with the riders. The riders have to come back and forth, which isn't the best situation right now, with everything that's going on, it would be great if you could have a self-contained jockey colony. So the quarter horses have been a bit of a struggle just because of the nature of what's going on in the Midwest right now. But we still have some real good trainers here with Olmsted. He's the one to watch. And Ed Ross Hardy is a Hall of Famer, who's always a good trainer. But those are the two I would think that you want to keep an eye on when they're in there. And yeah, the pick three with the quarter horses is, you know, not huge pools, but 20,000-25,000, which is a nice way to close it out. You got two thoroughbred races with a quarter horse race. You can find some advantages there as well. So I think every pool is playable. I'll always say that. Every pool, every breed is playable if you can find an edge.
Well, and when it comes to the pool, the biggest story and one that I've basically, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday mornings, we've been recapping the pick fives. And, you know, what anecdotes have you heard? Of course, we had the story opening week, which I hope you heard, Jeff, with Canterbury Mike, who was one of the two people that cashed for $58,000, but you know, then later in the second week, you had back-to-back record payoffs. Talk about what you're hearing and, what recommendations in terms of approaches, because it does seem, that you've got to plug in and be willing to spread almost to, both sides of the cake with the frosting. You've got to really pick your spot particularly the Minnesota bred maidens, that seems to be a place where we're getting, bonanza numbers. Some thoughts about pick five tickets and how to approach it.
I agree with you. I think you do need to, in some cases, go deep. And we did have the two record payoffs, $85,000, and the next night we came back, I think, one ticket, $98,000, and there was some real UFOs in those combinations that would have been difficult to find. Last night we had a couple of horses that made some sense, that paid some big prices, but they were on the turf going, and they both, I think, went gate to wire, which is rare, but that tells you a little bit about the weather here. So those are things you want to watch, too. Now, if we get rain, that could change, but generally you don't look at turf racing and look for speed. In most cases, this course traditionally has been that big swoop move on the turn where the horses come from the mid or back of the pack and win. And when the weather gets dry like it can in June and July, late June and early July, you can get some of those speed balls. So that's something that I would keep an eye on. And I think people do tend to leave sometimes looking, don't key in on the lone speed in turf races like they do in dirt, and they should. But you're right. I think you've got to find some anchors. And it's been hard to do because some of the top guys that we've talked about haven't been as dependable. The Diodoros and the Mac Robertsons with horses that look like cinches haven't been cinches, and that's led to some real big numbers. So I think, you had Brian Aragone on last week, and he puts all of his picks out on Twitter. And I think it helps to take a look at what he's got, what has going on, because he does his homework. He talks with trainers. He watches a lot of replays. He can find some sneaky plays. So I think consulting his selections as you're putting your tickets together can only help. But the Minnesota bred races traditionally have been formful, and they're not as much so this year, and which is interesting to me, because normally Mac Robertson will dominate with Minnesota bred special, especially the maiden special weight races. He has the best horses, and they generally win. He hasn't started a lot of them this year, which has opened it up for other trainers to win some races, and it's made it more confusing. But we have seen some weird things. We had, that last week, Nevada Litvin won with a horse that didn't look great unless you were to dig deep in a maiden special weight turf race and paid $94. And that was one actually owned by the Canterbury Racing Club, so I've got some involvement with it. And
nice.
I thought it was just in there to run, just to give the owners a thrill, and the thing ends up winning. So and now he's going to move forward into one of the races tomorrow. So there's been some weird things like that, but I think you've just got to be willing to get creative and not necessarily throw trainers out that haven't been winning in the past.
Well, and that Litvin horse with Alonzo Quinonez, 46-1, the Shanghai Bobby Filly, little feathered Indian, that was in the turf sprint. That was open company, but there was also the state bred winner, Candy Prince, for Cisco Bravo, and that was a 36-1 shot as well. So there's your state bred play. The day before, Clinton Lindsay brought home at 40. almost 7-1, Bruce Reichen's Madisonian. That was a state-bred filly group. So there, you know, there's been that parade of, you know, of Minnesota bred that has made it tough. How about Son of Poseidon for Tony Rengsdorf, 39-1? You know, it seemed for a period, Jeff, that every time I was doing the recap, it was a state bred product that was lighting up the board in the sequence.
You're right. At Son of Poseidon, I could not have found that one with the next day's newspaper. I still don't know how that horse won. The Bravo horse you mentioned, that's another guy, a trainer, very consistent. And that horse, I believe, was owned by and bred by Winchester Place Thoroughbreds, who have a lot of very, you know, well-bred horses. She's got a farm in Kentucky, and they have some Minbreds, they have some Kentucky breds. So anytime a horse from that wins, and I was surprised it was that price, to be honest with you, because they have some quality race horses, and Bravo's a heck of a trainer. So that one was a little bit of a mystery, and I can't remember where the money went in that race, but I was surprised that horse went off at the price that it did. And I think a lot of the players were as well, because it didn't have, it wasn't Eckleberry that was riding it, and which I think might have thrown people off, and it wasn't Loveberry, which is the two riders, those are the two riders that Bravo uses. So, but he'll branch out. You know, these trainers don't. Mac Robertson using Chirinos now, that surprises people sometimes too, that, you know, Mac will jump around from jockey to jockey. It just depends who he favors at the time. I think you have to look at that as well, because it's not always about jockey trainer combinations. A lot of it's, you know, jockey or trainer and agent combinations that have a long history, and the agents have changed over the years as far as their affiliation with riders. So those are things you kind of behind the scenes, but things well worth looking at.
Well, let's take a look at tomorrow and the action in terms of the stakes action. Anyway, it starts with the Oaks and the Northbound Pride Oaks. Goes as the third, and most of these, I think all the turf stakes are of the mile variety, except for the sprint, right? Yes.
Yeah.
Four 1 mile turf races, and then the Honor the Hero which includes Chief Cicatrice, and also Well Abled for Ravelli. So pretty nice headline match when we get to that. But let's start with the Oaks.
Well, interesting. Now, Mike Maker has three horses entered for tomorrow, and Florent Giroux was named to ride all of them. Now, of course, he won't be coming, so I don't know who the replacement rider is going to be. I'm not sure if he, Maker's going to bring someone else in, or if he'll pick from our colony, and there's plenty of riders available. But this race, with all the speed that's in here, it seems to set up either for Mike Maker's horse, the one Ask Bailey, or the three Urban Fairy Tale, who's owned by the ownership group we just mentioned, Winchester Place Thoroughbreds, trained by Ian Wilkes. But everyone else is speeding. You Defend the Rose, that's a Mac Robertson Minbred who just won sprinting, has never gone long, never been on the turf. Little Feathered Indian we just talked about. Maiden Breaker now, who's going to stretch out and you know, Tri-Stakes Company. It seems like a long shot. Sean Davis, who we talked about, this was that horse that won off the layoff at 7-1, drew away by 5.5 lengths on the turf, so stretching out and trying the turf for the first time. And Macho's Vision, if you can believe the fractions, last time out, went 21 and 43-2 for the half, going 5 furlongs, ended up getting tired. But if the horse tries to do that again, if she goes that fast again, everyone will be chasing her, and I think the pace is going to slow down. And then Jose Silva, who's a 33% trainer or higher at Canterbury, has another horse that's also stretching out and trying the turf for the first time in Smart and Wicked. So all those horses seem to want the lead, and I think it's just going to set up for Ask Bailey or Urban Fairy Tale, and you have to maybe make a decision. I think Ask Bailey certainly has the seasoning, I think, but is a one-run closer, and we'll see who rides her. I'd prefer to have a jockey that has experience over this course, but would have been great to have Giroux here as well. He's certainly one of the best in the business on turf, and it's unfortunate he can't make it, but you got to wish, you know, you wish him well, and you hope that he has a speedy recovery and gets back in the saddle. But we'll find a suitable replacement, and I have to think it's one of those two winning.
Well, and one of the decisions you're going to have to make in this sequence, several decisions, because there's no shortage of horses that are trying the turf for the first time, and you know that weren't necessarily entered with the idea that weather might, you know, rein the thing off. That's not what the intent is, and so you're going to have to look at some pedigree and, you know, and some stats, because there's some horses that are a little mysterious in here, in terms of, you know, their prospects moving over to the lawn.
I agree. I don't see any turf breeding that jumps out at me. I look more in this race at the running styles, and I just feel like it's. I have a hard time thinking that anyone's going to, that there's lone speed in here. I think they're going to knock heads. I think they're going to go extremely fast, especially these horses stretching out for the first time, which is four of them. And I think Makers, every year with our turf races, you know, he did it back in the Claiming Crown days, in the early days of Claiming Crown. He would find horses and he would aim them to the Claiming Crown at Canterbury and he would win. And he's been doing the same kind of thing here for our stakes races, where he'll nominate a bunch of horses for every race. And then he'll just cherry pick the one that he wants to send, and they almost always seem to fire. So I would take Ask Bailey myself just based on the seasoning. But again, the knock is she hasn't run since last November, but seems to be working well, and he can fire off a layoff. So if I'm playing any kind of a sequence wager here, maybe the pick four that starts in race two or something, I would probably use both of those horses.
We turn to the Mystic Lake Mile, and this race came up already this morning on the show a couple different times, and the presence or the entry of Rudy Brissett with the Black Album, he's been entered in everything. The Schuster winner last week, then he was entered in yesterday's Horse of Racing Age sale, and now he's entered here.
And I've heard that this horse will scratch, the Black Album.
Yeah, I figured.
I think the strategy was to enter both races, and if they got rained off in Indiana, that they would race him here. But so I think he can draw a line through the Black Album. I'm also told that the defending Mystic Lake Mile champion, No Brag Just Fat, is not going to ship in. So, and I had talked to the trainer, Eric Heitzman, last week, and he more or less said that there's some logistical issues. Now, this is another horse that hasn't raced since last summer, and he was going to give it one work and try to figure out how to get here. But I think the combination of the two things, the layoff and just the difficulty in shipping, kind of talked him out of it. And it is a tough field. Now, it's a long way to ship from Louisiana Downs up here. Last year, Heitzman was stabled in Minnesota, and he stayed down home. He's a Cajun, and he stayed at home this year. So we can scratch those two off. But still, a very interesting race, I think. And I'm hoping it doesn't rain, because I Tut's Revenge, we're not going to get 12-1 probably, but Tut's Revenge to me looks like lone speed, and that's a horse that if he can get the lead, establish a pace, and I think he can. I think Tut's Revenge has a big chance to win. And Clint Stewart is not a household name, but a really good trainer, and he's done exceptionally well at Canterbury with turf horses. Normally he runs in Iowa, and he would occasionally ship horses up here. They don't have a turf course at Prairie Meadows. We do. He would ship horses up here, and he would win at big numbers. So I think Tut's Revenge is the horse to catch, and that's one that I'm going to feature prominently in my plays, and I think Brian is as well, Aragonia. I know we talked about this on Saturday, and he likes that horse quite a bit as well.
Well, and I'm sorry that Eric can't get up to Canterbury with No Brag Just Fact. The factor would be son would be making 5-year-old debut. This is not only the defending winner. This is a beautifully bred factor 5-year-old. We'll keep an eye on him into the dam for those that don't have PPs in front of them. Jostle, the absolutely wonderful Jostle, and No Brag Just Fact has already amassed 200,000 in a couple of years of racing, and you know, based down in Louisiana. So we'll see what Eric where he turns up. the $75,000 mile. Gets us to the Derby, and Jeff, this race has been growing in prominence. Obviously, this year it's a little bit of a different scenario, but the Mystic Lake Derby had gotten the attention of people like Bill Mott in recent summers, and talk a little bit about this field, that group of seven that came together.
Well, you're right. This is a race that's grown in stature, and we had to cut the purse, like a lot of tracks. We're trimming things back, and it's 100,000 this year. It's been 200,000, but if you look through the history, Mike Stidham won it the first 2 years. Bill Mott, Chris Block, Bernie Flint came back to Canterbury and was triumphant. Ian Wilkes won it 3 years ago with Giant Payday, who's in that Mystic Lake Mile we just talked about, and then Mike Maker for the Ramseys has won it the last 2 years. So, and Makers, he's going to make a run out of here, too. He's got the morning line favorite with the four, Angelus Warrior. Again, we'll have a jockey change for Giroux. But that horse looks like probably the horse to beat in here. I think it'll take quite a bit of money, but so will the one Bayou Prospector with Wilkes, and that's another Winchester Place. That's a homebred, a Kentucky bred for Winchester Place, who's the horse seems to fit as well, has that kind of running style that will fit, I think, the pace setup where Michelle Boyce ships in Summer Assault, goes with Loveberry, one of our top jockeys, and that might be the horse to catch, Summer Assault. I think they're going to have to run that one down. But there is some other speed in here, too. We mentioned Sean Davis, and here he is again with the 5 Hondo Lane. Arietta aboard. Arietta just won for 20 on our turf course, but he is one of our top dirt riders for sure, and a defending champion last year. He was our leading rider by many. Hondo Lane has a little bit of speed as well, but I kind of see this one the same way I looked at the Oaks, is that I think the speed is going to set it up for one of the closers, and again, those closers happen to be trained by Mike Maker and Ian Wilkes, so I think the one and the four are the horses to beat in here. I don't have anything that's real outrageous in this race. I think those two will jump out at the public as well.
Totally makes sense. Angelus Warrior, the four, the Jerseytown Colt, the Mr. Fipke bred. And by the way, speaking of Mr. Fipke, and I'm sure it'll come up tomorrow with Sid, Seeking the Soul was retired yesterday. But Angelus Warrior, 9-5 on the line. And Bayou Prospector, 4-1 on the morning line, probably gets bet down from there a little bit for Ian and Alex Canchari. So, and of course, Angelus Warrior is going to need a rider with Giroux sidelined the Mystic Lake Derby. Let's talk about the sixth, Jeff. In fact, there's two non-stakes that'll be part of the Pick Five. And the Pick Five does start with that Derby and then this second level allowance going long on the main track.
Right, I think that's where you've got to make some decisions, is with that Derby and playing the Pick Five. I mean, can you single? Can you go too deep and maybe go extremely deep in this 1 mile dirt race, the sixth race, which has assembled a pretty good field here. I tried last time out, Jerry's Pride and Joy, who went off at 6-1, and I thought I was going to get there at the inside the 16th pole. I thought this horse was going to pull away and didn't. Just absolutely stopped and got beat by three quarters of a length. So I'm going to try Jerry's Pride and Joy again. There is a little more speed in here. We're not going to have lone speed with that horse, but I think it can certainly improve. You've got Deodoro in here now, and with the five professional, Arietta rides, comes off of a win, and now stepping up a little bit in class. But I don't see getting 8-1 on professional either. Mr. Benz is qualified, and Silva wins a lot of races. There's so many options in here that I think you're going to have to go three or four deep. This might be the kind of race, if you think the other ones are going to come back fairly chalky, this is a spot I think where you could maybe find a price. And you've got some of our top trainers in here, too. I probably would spread in this race. At least that's the way I look at it. I don't know how you see it, this one, Steve, but I think I would spread here and try to get a bit of a price.
I don't know if it's a, he's certainly not going to be a price, but one horse that I think has got to be included in the Pick Five, Clear the Mind. First off, the claim for Villafranco and Danny Caldwell. They poached this one from Jose Silva. And, you brought up the very germane issue with Jerry's Pride and Joy. This is, as we call it, a refusenik, a horse that just is, when they're leading late late in a race, they're looking around for somebody who's supposed to win. And this is one of those horses that drives you crazy. You almost have to, on form, include, but he just never wins. Then there's the opposite case, Clear the Mine, who's a 10-time winner. And I got no problem, first off the claim, using Villafranco and Loveberry for Danny Caldwell, going to include. I know exactly what you're saying. This is a well-matched field, going the 1 mile on the main.
And I think Clear the Mine will have a different setup. He comes out of that same race as Jerry's Pride and Joy, where that horse was really the lone speed in the race. And I think we're going to have a bit of a challenge pace here. So Clear the Mine, second off of a short layoff, a couple-month layoff with the new barn, I think this horse does move up. So it makes perfect sense. And, you know, you look at the horse's past performances, I could see some people even singling Clear the Mine. Not me, but I could see how you
small
can make
budget.
A case for
yep.
that.
Yep, small budget. Small budget may do just that. Danny Caldwell. You know, one thing about playing Canterbury that you got to deal with. You know, Mike Sisk with M&M and Danny Caldwell. You got these are outfits that win races by the bucket load, and so you know connections at Oaklawn, connections here, it all plays in. The Lady Canterbury, they're going to go the mile on the grass, the last of the mile stakes, 75,000 for the 3-year-old fillies and mares.
So we've got Pin Up Girl entered for main track only, so she'll scratch. That'll leave us with a field of 11. One of my favorite races, the Lady Canterbury, was the first turf race ever run on this course back in 1986, and it was won by Sauna, you know, a horse that with some good connections as well. That was Suma Stables. And, but the one piece of information that I look at year in and year out, this will be the 28th year, and so in 27 runnings of the Lady Canterbury, the favorites only won 3 times. So I like to believe that that's a trend and not just a rarity. So I like to try to play against the favorites here. Your Beach Flower, who won the race last year, 10-1 for Mac Robertson, is back in this race again. You've got some other horses that I think could make some noise, like Eighth, the 4-8, I think that's how you pronounce it, Eighth. A Fairgrounds Shipper hasn't run since March. It's 4-1 on the morning line. I think that horse might take some more money, but those are two horses that seem to make a lot of sense in the morning line favorite, Winning Envelope. Has a running style she's going to be absolutely at the back of the pack trying to make a run. Now, this is another horse that Giroux was named to ride. So I'll be really interested to see who picks up on the mount here. If you're at the back of the pack, needing to weave your way through 10 other horses, that could be difficult. At a short price, that's a horse I'd be willing to play against. You know, you might pay the price for doing that, but I think with that running style, the horse could be up against it here. And that's so I'm going to look for horses that are more forwardly placed and see if I can get lucky with a horse like Beach Flower or even First Mate, the Minnesota Bred. Seems like a stretch, but the horse ran really well last time out on in the Minnesota Turf Distaff against State Breds, and now gets a little extra ground. That was 7.5 furlongs, goes further here from the one hole. That horse interests me as well, and it will be a big price. So I'm going to go price shopping in this race here, and I'm going to try to beat Winning Envelope if I can.
Well, I think you got to also has to work out a trip with Arietta, but Deodoro sends Fool's Paradise for the aforementioned M&M and on a 2-race win streak, including that Lone Star turf win. And in fact, since returning to the grass after the winter spent at Delta and then at Will Rogers, Fool's Paradise looks pretty good and you know, has to probably save some ground, you know, into the turn and then come with a run. But 5-1, pretty attractive, I thought, on Fool's Paradise. That gets us to 2 sprints to close things out on the night and in the pick 5, the last of the stakes. Honor the Hero, 50,000, going 5 on the turf. And in here, well-abled, you look at his presence, and he's the one to catch for Ravelli and Loveberry, and you know, in pursuit will be Chief Cicatrice, who makes a turf debut, potentially. Davis scratched him out of that spot the other day. Where was that? Was that in Indiana, I think?
And you know, he had entered Chief Cicatrice here a couple weeks ago, 2 or 3 weeks ago. It was that night that we had the long rain delay.
Right.
He was in the paddock, saddled the horse, and then scratched it after it rained.
Right.
And we were staying on the turf, but there was a long delay. I think he just decided that on a wet turf, after everything that had gone on, he would scratch. So he never did get that turf prep into this horse. I'm surprised he maybe didn't work him over the turf. I mean, we don't have a lot of turf workouts here, but once you're entered in a stake, you're allowed to work on the turf.
Sure.
And I thought maybe he would run him over the turf once, but didn't. So that adds a lot of intrigue, because we know that Chief Cicatrice, who's won the $500,000 in purses, has certainly got back class. But and it'll be interesting to see how this plays out. And five furlongs in turf is probably my weakest race category. For whatever reason, I just can never quite figure out the pace in these things. But Well-Abled has one way to go, and that's on the lead. But so do the horses to his inside. Uncle Goyle looks like is a predominantly a speed horse. And Lawton generally seems to do his best running right up on the pace. Mr. Banjo Man, last time out, they tried to rate him. He was on the turf going five furlongs. And normally this horse had been a need-the-lead type. And if he wasn't going to get the lead, you could pitch him. And that played out time and time again here. You can see, looking at his past performances, when he doesn't get the lead or at least be, you know, neck and neck with another horse, he fades out of it. And they took him off the pace last time, and it was impressive, I thought. He didn't win, but he ran a really nice race. So maybe that's going to be the strategy here again. Although, looks like they tried that with Amy's Challenge over the weekend, and that didn't work out so well, taking a speed horse back. So
no.
So I don't know. But, you know, and Sean Davis has another horse in here with Butler aboard, the two, League of Shadows, who's intriguing as well, who has a win on the turf. So this race, to me, if it's not Well-Abled and that horse is 7-5 on the morning line, probably deserves to be so, just based on, you know, the numbers that get bet. The buyer's speed figures are better than most everybody in here other than Chief Cicatrice. So those two horses take most of the money. But, I mean, if you can give me a price horse in here, Steve, I would appreciate it, because otherwise I may have to go all in this race.
Hey, well, Lawton has races that can win this. And, you know, in terms of style, you know, setting up shop, Eichelberry right, you know, behind the speed, that may play well. I don't think they want a duel with Well-Abled. I think ideally Uncle Goyle right next door, that those two go at it. And once they clear, Eichelberry can just set up shop and maybe get first run. And let's see. You know, let's see what the plan is for Arietta with Chief Cicatrice, too. I mean, he's not going to be too far off of it. So maybe there's three of them into the turn, and it sets up perfectly for 6-1 Lawton.
Why not? That's another guy who wins races by the barrelful, Carl Groberg. So I would not be surprised if he pulled it off. But just a fascinating race. There's so many unknowns in here and so many quality horses in this race that have done some good things, whether it's state bred or open company, that I think it's going to be a pretty fascinating race. And I'm hoping I can catch a price in here somehow. I don't know what it's going to be, but I'll plant my flag on a single somewhere else in the card and probably go deep in this race as well.
Let's take a look at the nightcap, and this is Maiden 16s going 5.5 on the main track, and it's a bit of a murky bunch. There's a couple of performances in here that are actually, you know, you could hang your hat on, including A Little Bit Techie, the 9 for Diodoro. This was a horse that spent the early part of the spring at Golden Gate with Jonathan Wong, and now, you know, has been moved in your direction and has, you know, had a couple of workouts, actually, at Canterbury. And certainly, you know, that debut effort when she was beaten a half length, that would, I think, would stand up here okay. A super saver out of a minister's wildcat mare, Tommy Town, bred this one. And, you know, that was the first horse that sort of grabbed me, 9-2. You know, after that, Biscottini for Silva, perhaps, cutting back a half furlong. And, you know, you gotta really kind of look under the hood with this bunch.
I agree. That the 9 is interesting to me. It's owned by Empire Racing Staples, who was co-leading owner last year. It's a guy that's Jason Bullard has brought a lot of new owners into the game. And they've gotten off to a bit of a slow start, don't have the same horses, but this looks like a private acquisition that, you know, that they're going to try to get back in the winner's circle with here. But, you know, the one that jumps out a little bit at me and is going to be a price is the 6, Miss Aggie Bling. Ed Ross Hardy is a quarter horse trainer. He's a Hall of Fame, Canterbury Park Hall of Fame quarter horse trainer, but he's had some success over the years with thoroughbreds. He'll just have an odd thoroughbred here and there. And this Miss Aggie Bling looks like it, you know, he ran against maiden special weights at Remington Park in November, December, so now he's had a little bit time off, comes back as a three-year-old filly. I'm going to presume that she's matured here. She's got some real nice workouts at Canterbury. And Rye Eckleberry gets aboard. Now, Rye, when he was a 17-year-old kid, he was riding here at Canterbury, and he was our leading quarter horse rider one or two times at least, but rode a lot of quarter horses and rode a lot of quarter horses for Ed Hardy. So I love to see those two teaming up here with a horse, because Rye, he probably has his pick of a lot of different horses, and Ed has very few thoroughbreds, and Rye's not riding quarter horses really much anymore unless he has to. Intriguing combination with the good works and a double-digit morning line and a horse that showed some speed as a two-year-old. This is going to be my price play. I will not leave Miss Aggie Bling off the ticket.
I like it, and I certainly never miss an opportunity to talk about Al and Bill Ullwelling. They've got a homebred in here that Gary Shearer sends out. Polar Sense has had some chances, but it feels like a nibbler, and at the very least is probably a B on your tickets. Certainly always happy when the Ullwellings and the Shearers do well.
Yeah, Gary Shearer is a heck of a trainer, too, and gets he wins at a high percentage every year, and he kind of gets overlooked because he doesn't have a huge stable, but he's another guy that just seems to have really good horses. And this is an interesting one, Polar Sense. The Dam Polar Plunge was a real nice racehorse at Canterbury, and they would take her south as well, but she was a real, real successful horse, and I'd love to see this filly run well for them. And you've got Denny Velasquez, who's a go-to rider for Shearer, so there's some things in here that make some sense. Not the big price that you're going to maybe need to make the pick five really pay, but that's one that if you're going deep, I think you can never overlook Gary Shearer.
Well, the key to these Canterbury pick fives has been just surviving legs and just getting winners linked up. And you got to be very clever. There's no doubt. This is not the typical card that we've dealt with, obviously, because it's a state card. So it's a little bit, a little bit more in terms of formful opportunity, but still a nice sequence. And looking forward, Jeff Matte, looking forward to watching and playing tomorrow night, and I appreciate the visit and the look and catching up on everything going on at Canterbury. It is Mystic Lake Derby and Lady Canterbury night tomorrow. Jeff, thanks a lot.
Thanks for the time. Really appreciate it, and enjoy the races.
There we go. Jeff Matte, everybody. And you can follow Jeff and Brian Aragone and everybody at Canterbury. And right now we've got just about 5 minutes to fill out the morning. And Rusty Arnold, I get a quick visit in, Rusty. And I wasn't going to let the week get too far afield without congratulating you on the Shakertown Exacta, you devil.
Oh, thank you, Steve.
Rusty, I was happy for you to run 1-2 as long as Totally Boss, was going to win.
Yeah, it was as a trainer, you have mixed emotions when that happens to you. And this year, just, I was allowed or able to keep those horses separated last year, and then with the coronavirus, our opportunities have just shrunk, and the places we can run them have shrunk, and it just, they've ended up in the same spot. And it's tough when they both showed up, they both ran winning races, but only one of them could get their head down on the wire.
Well, I know that it was called, Kurt Becker called it, a photo, but it was pretty obvious that Leinster had won and Totally Boss had arrived just a stride too late. But certainly happy for Amy Dunn and the partners that are involved. And, Rusty, both of them, let's talk about, you mentioned the Corona situation. And going into this last week, I said that both of them looked like, you would been poised in terms of getting them ready to run well in the spot. And, you know, totally boss. It started with that allowance at Churchill. And, you know, give us a feel for, you know, how you've adjusted the schedules.
Well, he was probably a little more compromised with getting ready for the first allowance race than Leinster was. Leinster came to me at Palm Meadows and trained probably for 2.5 months. You know, the plan was run into Shakertown. We did. We made the right race. We just made it a few months later. We were supposed to run at mid-April in the Shakertown. And Totally Boss had spent the winter at Marco Farm, which the Hills do with them, and he was supposed to come in to be at mid-March. Well, when we didn't get in here until May, it put him about a month and a half behind coming in. So he was a little bit more behind going into the first race. But actually, after that, he had just done exceptional. He had trained well into this race, and you know, both horses were doing well, and the Breeders' Cup's run here, and both people wanted to run here, and I was in total agreement, and we brought them both over here.
You came within probably about 5, 6, 7 inches of a dead heat, which would have been perfect. Rusty, you know, the opportunities this, you know, this summer, talk a little bit about some of your decisions, because I think you'll, you know, you're going to run some horses at Saratoga, but you're not, I don't think you're bringing a string, are you?
No, I'm not. It'll be the first time since 1985 that I haven't been stabled there, which is going to be tough. My wife and I, we love Saratoga. We like spending the summer there, but there were several reasons. We had, you know, concrete roads going on the shelf, and not being able to run there was part of it. Us coming out of Florida 2 months late and only being here is part of it. And you know, brutally honest, my stable was a touch weaker top to bottom than it had been. And we just made a business decision not to pick up and go to Saratoga. We're going to pick some spots and run some horses, but instead of taking the whole string there, we hopefully that changes next year and the world gets a little bit closer to normal and we all can get back to normal and we go back up there. But it just was a more of a, you know, two or three things put together. We decided not to go.
And you're not, you know, you're far from alone doing that. There's any number that of you know, prominent Saratoga regulars that are just, you know, if there's an opportunity, you'll ship some in.
Yeah, and you know, we got this 5-day meet at Keeneland. That helped. You know, it made a big difference. You know, we got to run some horses there, and we opened back up the first week of September at Churchill with Derby Week, and they'll put those races back on that we didn't get to run in May, and you know, it isn't as far off as it seemed, and it just made more sense for a lot of people to stay home this year. I don't think anybody wanted to, but it made more sense this year.
Well, certainly, you know, certainly going to miss you and Sarah around town and you know, in the paddock and such, but you gotta expect we'll see you with one of these, right? I mean, there's too many good sprint opportunities on the turf for one or the other.
Yeah, I would think that maybe Leinster would go for the Troy.
Yeah.
He ran in it last year. Totally Boss didn't go last year. I don't think he'll go this year. I think he'll stay home. He actually went to Marco Farm the day after the race, and he'll spend 2 or 3 weeks there, depending on how he does. He freshens up really good. They do a great job with him and put some weight back on him and get him happy. They turn him out on the grass and do a lot with him, and then they'll send him back into Keeneland, and we'll get him ready for his next spot. So,
nice.
And as I told both people last year, I think these horses had maybe peaked on me before we got to the Breeders' Cup. I was trying to find a silver lining in all that had happened this spring, and I told the Duns when I talked to them, I said, you know, last year we ran this horse in Florida, we ran him at Keeneland, we ran him at Churchill, we ran him in New York, we ran him at Kentucky Downs, we ran him at Keeneland again, and maybe I'd done too much with him. And, you know, by this happening, they're probably going to go into the Breeders' Cup this year if everything goes good. We're still a ways away, but they'll be fresher horses than they were last year, and maybe that'll be a good thing. So we're looking at hopefully there's a silver lining in what happened through the first half of the year for my two sprinters.
Rusty Arnold, everybody, also got Stand Tall, got the diploma going long on the turf. And Rusty, got about 10 seconds. How's Power of Magic on Friday at Ellis?
I think she's going to run her race. I think we've got her where we want her. We tried to sprint on the grass, had rained off, then we ran long from the 12 hole, didn't work, and I think we'll see her show up on Friday.
Well, and that's, of course, the honor code filly out of Magical Ride. Rusty, always great to connect. We'll talk to you during the summer.
Okay, Steve, anytime. Thank you.
Rusty Arnold, everybody. One of the real stalwarts. It's gonna suck that there's no Rusty and Sarah at the spa. But they'll come. They'll see him once at least, right? All right. We're gonna see you tomorrow. A busy Tuesday. Canterbury, Indiana, much more. Thanks to everybody that came through this morning. Talk to you in the morning.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Developed by Horsemen, Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, environment-friendly, paperless revolution of how equine industries bill and receive payments. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for each horse, whose owners can pay through the same website with just one click. Say goodbye to stacks of invoices, handwritten checks, and postage costs. Easy accounting for all parties with the highest online security measures. Get started free at Horsebills.com. Simply register with your name and email address. Free to sign up. No subscription fees to vendors until the first invoice is sent. For owners, you get a free account, comprehensive dashboard with information on all horses owned and billing records, ACH and credit card payment options. For vendors, generate invoices efficiently and receive payments quickly from both owners and other vendors. Syndicate and partnership managers get flexible billing and payment options to both vendors and syndicate members. For more info, call 888-938-4643, 888-938-4643, or log on to horsebills.com. That's horsebills.com.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the 5 Kentucky Tracks for Horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.
DRF Sports Form Digital Edition, your ultimate weekly betting guide. Published by Daily Racing Form, DRF Sports Form delivers all of the analysis and insight you need for every NFL game and more than 40 college football matchups. Beat the spread with powerful trends and sharp angles. Tap into best bets, expert picks, parlay winners, and more. All for just $4.99 per issue. Get this week's edition free. Visit DRF.com/sportsform. Enter code DRF Sports.
Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.